Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up! I want to dog you until I wear your Texas ass out. The game is awesome to play. And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Greetings and salutations, Edward. How are you?
I'm doing good. So, Craig, why don't you introduce our other co-host here, and I will try getting our guest on the line.
Our other co-host is the one, the only, the biggest brain of professional wrestling, since Bobby Heenan, Mr. Chris Cottrell.
That's me. Yep. You would introduce me now, please.
Yeah, I like to give people a wind-up and then the pitch. Ed just throws the ball.
You do a lot better job, though. You don't need to put at me if I don't say something interesting.
Well, we try on this show, no matter what anybody thinks.
That's right.
Actually, well, you and I mean, not the other fellow.
Sorry for the little lame description in the show thread. I was in a hurry.
Yeah, that's all right. So it was very last minute. Very last minute.
Oh.
If it was any more last minute, it would be next week.
That's true.
No.
So what's going on?
No, oh, I just got done fighting with Brian Albert. Yes, sir.
Brian Albert, great. Could you introduce our guest, please?
Our guest tonight is the co-author of the Wrestle Crap Book of Lists, and at this point in time is writing new chapters of the death of WCW. I know he's a very patient man because he's co-writing this book with one and Alvarez. Please welcome to the show from WrestleCrap, R.D. Reynolds.
See, now why do you guys have to start like that? You got to pick on poor Brian. He's not even here to defend himself.
R.D., you would have had the day that I had exchanging texts with this man, I'll explain it later on the show, but he's very set in his ways. And he doesn't show that all the time.
And he basically makes me want me to kick his ass like every other day of the week.
So you're saying I'm like the only person on planet Earth that has a very positive relationship with Mr. Alvarez?
Well, I think Randy does.
She does not sound that way, but if you say so.
It's very, when you make plans, well, okay, let me start with this. When we used to wrestle, we would have to do something called idiot-proofing a trip, where we would tell people, okay, we're going to get together at 6 o'clock to leave for wherever. Except with Brian, you had to idiot-proof the trip and tell everybody else we're meeting at 6 o'clock. And Brian, we're meeting at 5:30.
Okay. There's people that are time challenged. He's a busy man, which you need to cut him a little bit of slack, right?
Exactly. And he's on his own schedule, and that was part of the argument that we had today. He has no idea what a working man's schedule is all about. He has no idea about getting up at 4 in the morning. He goes to bed at 4 in the morning, but some of us need to get up at 4 in the morning. So,
right.
Anyway, that's another story for another time. We're not talking about him. We're talking about R.D. Reynolds tonight, and we're talking about Wrestle Crap and the death of WCW part deux.
I have a question. At some point, I assume you're going to talk to Brian about this book. Do you think that he will have to defend me on your show?
Absolutely not.
The way I just had to defend him.
Absolutely
no, not at all.
Of course not.
Okay.
Yes. In dealings in life, Brian walks to the beat of his own drum. And and luckily we don't have to do things like that with you. You're just RD.
I'm just plain old RD.
Now, speaking of Brian being a jerk, didn't you actually go to Seattle to visit Brian and he sued you off with Vinny instead?
Oh, see, now you guys are just, now you're digging into the past. And no, I gave Brian literally no notice that I was going to be in Seattle that day. And then it worked out poorly for Brian, if you ask him, I'm sure, because he missed out on a giant meal where, and when I say giant meal, I mean Vince had this steak that had this huge bone through it. And usually it sounds terrible, but this was like some fancy steak, and I don't know anything about steaks. But this thing had this bone that looked like you could put it on like the hood of your Cadillac.
Nice.
Like a bone the steak had. So if anything, you know, Brian missed out. He didn't stand me up. I gave him no notice.
There you go.
Well, I noticed. I did see a picture of that steak, and yes, it looked like something out of the Flintstones, and I think it also had like crab meat or something. So
yeah, I thought it was. I honestly thought it was the table over. So
yeah.
I've noticed that Vince is like the devil on my shoulder when it comes to dining. You know, there was a time where we had decided we're going to go to this burger joint. It was called the Lunchbox Laboratory. We're actually going to go to this and then go to Brian's house for a pay-per-view. And we ate ourselves absolutely sick. And then we got to Brian's house and he ordered pizza. And, and Brian would not let up, you know, calling us pussies and everything else for not eating the pizza with him. And, you know, when somebody does that to a man, I mean, you got to have a couple slices of pizza.
Now this laboratory place that you ate at, this sounds fascinating. Was it like a themed restaurant? Please tell me they brought your soft drinks and, like, test tubes. They cooked it on a Bunsen burner at your grill. I mean, at your table.
Actually, I think they did have assorted different sodas that they were mixing, and then just a ridiculous 1 pound burger that Vince and I took on, you know, each. So
okay.
Yeah.
So the next time I come out to Seattle and Brian quote unquote stands me up, maybe I can hang out with you and Vince, and we can go to the laboratory.
Actually, we got so sick off the laboratory, we swore to each other we would never go again. But there's plenty of other places in Seattle to go to.
I will definitely keep that in mind. So, and I will try and give everyone notice if I ever head back out to Seattle.
And then we'll tell Brian 30 minutes earlier than everybody else.
Well, if I had told Brian I was coming, I should have told him I was coming, like, you know, give him, you know, an extra day's notice. Maybe he would have been able to do it.
True.
Yeah.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Well, RG, go ahead, Craig.
I was going to say, you are currently in the process of adding new chapters to the death of WCW. How's that going? Where is it going? What are you guys writing?
It's kind of incorrect to state that we're adding new chapters to the death of WCW, because whenever people hear you're doing a new, you know, you're going to do a 10th anniversary edition of a book, you would think, or, you know, a second edition or whatever it would be, you would think that is how you would handle it. You just, you would say, okay, you know, do a couple more chapters. That is not what is happening with the death of WCW. It is going to have, I think it's going to have two new chapters. I know I had written a new intro to it, and Brian had written a new epilogue to it. But bulk of the book is not so much, we're just going to slap a couple extra chapters in there, but it's literally adding more details and rewriting some of what is in the book. It's basically just adding a ton more details to what was in there, you know, originally. Some of that was due to the fact that we had, in the original draft, we had quite a bit more than what wound up being in the final version of the book. We had some more that was originally written that just was on, quote-unquote, the cutting room floor, just had to hit a word limit, which we don't have now, thankfully. But more of it is just adding more details and talking to more people, having a ton more quotes into the book, and just, I mean, just so much extra detail in the book that even I, just some of the stuff that we have found doing more research for it is just, like, shocking. If all I can say is, if you enjoyed the original version of it, you will be reading through it and going, oh my, whoa, you know, that was not in there. This whole section, I think the first chapter of the book, I think we call it Mr. Turner's Baby Boy, where we talk about the beginning of WCW. That chapter, just to give you an idea, is, I think it's about 70% larger than it was originally. So it is. Yeah, I mean, it's not something that it's, you know, you're looking at, you know, we're just slapping in another chapter. We're literally, you know, beefing up all the chapters in the book. And, yeah, just reading through some of this stuff, it was pretty fascinating just to see how much more information that we were able to put into this one. And it's just been a lot of fun. Now, I think people are really going to enjoy it.
You said you're doing research. What kind of research are you doing? Are you watching Nitros again? Are you reading The Observer? I mean, how is the research? Because it was a long time ago.
A little bit of what you said. Talking to people, just doing, you know, just trying to, doing, yeah, some Observer stuff, some Figure Four stuff, a lot of talking to people that, you know, we had not talked to originally. And some of it is just, there's a lot more information, you know, out there. I'll give you a perfect example. We found an article in the New York Times. And I believe this was from somewhere in the 89 to 91 time frame on WCW and the WWF. And there was fascinating stuff in there that we did not know until we went through and said, okay, let's just find all we can about WCW during that era. This is giving away one of my favorite parts in the book, but the New York Times article actually talks about how WCW was working on an electronic contraption of some sort that they would use with children to do test marketing, and it included something like a rage meter and a slam meter. And I was just sitting there thinking, this company, you know, that was spending money developing electronic apparatus the fact that they would do that is just so mind-boggling that they would think, oh, this is, yeah, you know what, this is a good use of resources. You know, what should we try to re-sign Ric Flair? No, we got to get this rage meter working. You know, that was something they were doing. And it's just fascinating because, I mean, we're fighting with stuff like that.
We end up throwing the results out afterwards anyway, so.
Exactly. So we're finding a lot of stuff, just tons of stuff like that. I mean, there's just so much in there. It's been pretty just amazing to be able to find more and more and more. Because I thought whenever we originally researched that, I had done a really good job. And I remember people, even within WCW, that were in WCW, at the time, you know, I remember Scott Hudson, you know, WCW announcer, said, you know, I don't know where, you know, Alvarez and Reynolds got all this stuff for this book, but man, they knew everything that was going on. So it was always a very big compliment. And I always thought we had done a really nice job of researching that first book, but this one's way beyond that.
Now, you had anything like for instance, like with TNA, and so many people migrated over there, and the shape that company's in, have you thought about adding anything like with TNA into the book?
Yes, there's actually a large one of our new chapters actually discusses TNA, and it is pretty crazy. One of the things we also did throughout the book is we have a the little sidebars that are lessons not learned, where we talk about things WCW, you know, that it happened that we mentioned in the book. And whenever we did that, then we'll say, okay, well, look, here's a perfect example. We pointed this out in the book, you know, and in the book originally, you know, one of the things that we had written in the book, the first words in Death of WCW, before it gets to forewords or, you know, the first chapters, you know, any of that stuff, the very first word in the Death of WCW are to Hunter and Steph. And we thought that was kind of funny, right? Okay, you chuckled. But it was also meant as, this is something that we really want people in this business, we want them to look at this, what happened with WCW, and not make the same mistakes. But
yeah,
that doesn't happen. You know, I mean, you see the same mistakes being made over and over and over. In fact, one of the original ideas behind the first Death of WCW was to write it as a handbook. And, you know, use it as, here are all the things that, you know, have done, you know, that WCW did wrong, you know, and do it that way. We decided that was way too, the format didn't really work. So we changed it so that it was, you know, chronological, which made for a lot easier of a read. But you know, we said to earn stuff and thought, okay, maybe someone will learn from what this company did. And of course they didn't, you know, no one ever does in this business. So throughout the new version of the book, you literally have we'll say, look, here's what, you know, Eric Bischoff did in, you know, 1998. No one learned from it because, you know, 15 years later, they're doing the exact same thing. And we pointed out, you know, have several of those throughout the book.
Now, RV, you had mentioned you've talked to a lot more people this go around, and could you compare, like, from now to from, like, 10 years ago, like, people talking to you? I mean, were people more open to talk to you guys, or was there any difference, or was it the same, or how would you compare that?
Oh, I mean, there was a lot of people that talked to us when we did the original version, and but sometimes, you know, the people we were talking to were working for Vince. So they're not going to say, yeah, go ahead and use, you know, go ahead and put this in your book. So we didn't even bother to quote it. But now, you know, a lot of those people are no longer there. And, you know, that now it's not a problem. So we have some some of that. Of course, you know, Brian, you have the Brian and I don't even know how to phrase it, the cash that they have in the industry. I don't mean money. I mean, like, you know, the relevance they have in the industry. I mean, sure, we are able to talk to more people. And I think the fact that when the original book came out, whenever they heard that these people are going to be writing the death of WCW, you had, you know, Brian, who was not as well known then as he is now. excuse me. So you had that again, you know, that was kind of working against you. You also had, you know, the WrestleCraft guy, and you know, obviously that's me. But the problem is, whenever you talk to somebody and you go, yeah, I work for, you know, I created WrestleCraft.com, the very worst in wrestling, and I want to talk to you, it makes it a very difficult sell sometimes. So we've been very fortunate this time that it's not been an issue. So
that's good. Go ahead, Craig.
On your website, Wikipedia has it listed as a onion style wrestling news. So it's like faux wrestling news.
Are now.
What are some of your top topics for this week, just for our listeners?
Oh boy, that is so funny. So what does Wikipedia say?
Wikipedia says headlines: faux wrestling stories in the style of "quote unquote" The Onion.
Oh, okay. We do have a part of the website that we call headlines. And okay. It is basically, you know, a riff of The Onion, except that it's all pro wrestling, you know, all pro wrestling based. On top of that, we also have on the main page of the site, we have what's called the Li-Fi Scanner. And that goes out and you know, we say it's combing the wrestling world. And it's basically one line, you know, headlines of just, you know, bogus things that we made up, you know, just trying to have some comedy on the site and have people be able to laugh at some of the stuff. Like one of the things that I know was on there in the last week was, you know, a one liner that said, "Smart fan thinks that how do I phrase? Smart fan believes that Total Divas may be completely on the up and up, you know, stuff like that."
Okay.
Yeah, but we do stuff like that all the time where we just poke fun. So,
are you trying to say that they work Total Divas?
I would never want to cast aspersions on anyone, you know, in that fine company. Actually, I can't say anything bad about Total Divas because it has actually led to one of my favorite things that we've come up with in recent years. We bullied Braxton, my radio podcast co-host for the RD and Blade show. Her and I came up with we decided to merge Total Divas with Fantasy Football on our most recent RD and Blade show. And it is just going to be, so each of us, it works exactly like Fantasy Football, where you have a team. And in this case, you draft five different people from the show. You draft you draft five people. Any of the five people on the show, two of them, and you start four people each week. So you start two of the divas, one of the boyfriends, and you also start a backstage personality. And you get various points for each thing that happens. So, for instance, if one of the girls is on her period, negative 2 points. You can lose points too, just like in football if you throw an interception, right? So it's been tremendously successful. So we got two of you on here, right? We got Ed, and we have Craig.
We also have Contrer.
And Contrer. Okay. Well, only two of you are going to get to. Now you all play. So we'll go through and we'll just ask each of you. Okay. Let's see. Contrer, you've been the quietest. So we're going to let you draft first. We're going to have Ed draft second so he doesn't complain and call me biased like he would Brian. And we'll have Craig draft third.
That's fair.
So you're going to draft one person. You each get to pick. Who would be your first person to draft, knowing that a lot of the points are generated from the drama on the show?
Okay.
I would draft the seamstress.
Oh, so you're gonna go see that would be like drafting a kicker in the first round, my friend.
I don't know about that. I don't want to take crap.
I was actually planning on picking the seamstress as my third pick, but
he's like on the other, like one of the three likable people on the damn show. Jeez. Her and Natalia and JoJo, but the only people I like on there.
But you don't get points. You don't get points for being just for being short or saying nothing. So JoJo would probably not net you a lot of points.
I would
maybe
an open
so she
will. Cameron.
I'm sorry. Who would you go with?
I would go with Cameron or what's her name, Arianne.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the girl that's as nutty as a Stucky's log, right?
Yeah, the bomb.com.
Yes, she would. She, you know, you're going to get a lot of points with. I actually drafted first, and I drafted Nikki Bella. Just because she has Cena's girlfriend, so you know she's going to get a lot of airtime. So the chances of her doing something stupid is pretty good.
And very buoyant, I might add.
Yes, she is quite buoyant. So, Mr. Prover, you get to take the final draft here in this.
I was going to pick the very buoyant Nikki Bella myself.
Mm-hmm. There you go. See, and that's but the Total Divas has just brought on a great amount of happiness for me because it's the, you know, it's a completely idiotic show, and I look forward to it more than probably any WWE show on any given week until Saturday Morning Slam returns. So.
Yeah, I think it's awesome.
Now,
ahead,
as kind of a follow-up question, you have something called the Gooker Award that you've given out for the past 12 years, and it's basically the worst gimmick, storyline, event in wrestling of the year. Do you have a top runner for 2013 so far?
Oh man, I don't know this. It's funny because I just have a feel. Usually, I have a pretty good feel for what I think is going to wind up, taking the lead, even if it's something I don't necessarily think is going to be the top thing. But I kind of have a feel for what the people are going to vote for. And honestly, I would say Total Divas would probably be in the. Would probably right now be in the lead. So
that would be the biggest travesty if they were to win the Gooker Award. They should be winning like the best show in like the Observer Award.
It'd be a travesty if they didn't.
Most perversely entertaining show. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. The show is horrible. It's stupid. It's BS, but it's entertaining. So nothing wrong with that. It sucks, but it's good.
Yep. But again, that's the feel that I get is that, you know, and it kind of depends on what is big going towards the end of the year because people have a short memory. So.
Now, speaking of like the Gooker Awards or just like just being inducted into the Wrestle Crap Hall of Fame, you always hear like old timers in interviews, old like, talk crap about like Dave Meltzer, some of the most threatening to kick his ass or whatever. Has anyone ever contacted you really pissed off and, like, I don't want to say threatened to kick your ass, but have you ever been, like, chastised for any of your inductions from the inductors, the inductees themselves?
Remember Men on a Mission?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oscar was courteous with me. And I had the temerity to call him a big fat rapping fool of a manager. He was just livid that I would besmirch his character in such a manner. And so I talked to
I said, were you the guys that Damien Demento got all mad at?
Damien Demento also he decided to like he at some point just started mocking us as well. And so we did a video response to him, you know, where, you know, I sat there, and it's on YouTube, where we Real Scrap Radio responds to Damien Demento, I think is what it's listed as. And, you know, we talked about, I gave some horrible promo and reading the Ken Patera story. You know, it was a fantastic book and all this other stuff. But, Damien Demento at one point had said something, too. And then we kept going back and forth with him. And then in the coup de grace, I mean, I had never met the guy before. I had never talked to him, anything. But then after we had, you know, gone back and forth on YouTube, he kept going back at us. Just one day out of the blue, I just shot him an email and said, hey, you know, what's going on? And so he and I started talking, and we got along great. And he actually showed up on April Fool's, one of the April Fool's radios. He just showed up and he was hosting the show. So, yeah, he turned out okay. And actually, Oscar turned out okay, too, because I had him on, and I just said, okay, you know, you want to give your side of the story, we'll interview you for the site. And, this was years ago, 10 years ago or whatever. I interviewed him for the site, at which time he proceeded to tell outlandish stories about how he opened for Frank Sinatra and all kinds of other stuff. Tremendous. Tremendous. You know... What he had to say. So,
Now you guys are also famous for buying. I think you guys bought I don't know if it was an auction or what, but you guys bought the Katie Vick costume.
Yes, sir.
And who? I've seen pictures with somebody wearing the costume. Who is that is wearing the costume pictures?
That was actually we bought that and we got it. We thought we got it. Got it as a steal, you know, because it was, you know, the Katie Vick outfit, and we thought, this thing's going to go for a lot of money, and it was on a WWE auction or something, and it came with a ton of stuff, because it came with the outfit, it came with pom-poms, it came with a bra and pants, I think three pairs of panties. Why it had all the panties, I don't know. and then it had... socks. And as I recall, it's been a long time since I've seen the outfit, but as I recall, it came with like three different pairs of socks, and they were like sized from like, you know, a size 13 men's sock like I would wear down to, you know, a sock that wouldn't fit on a preemie, you know, a premature baby. I mean, I don't know why they had these weird socks, but they came with that. And it was all autographed by Hunter, and we also got a certificate of authenticity signed by none other than Linda McMahon.
Wow.
Which I think we would we paid $200 for this ensemble. And I'm pretty sure
that's crazy.
$200, right?
Yeah.
That's what we thought. And we had actually been offered, before I get to what we've been offered, I think that had, instead of Hunter signed it, had Linda McMahon signed, you know, the Katie Vick outfit. Instead of $200, it probably would have been a $2,000. Speaking of $2,000, we were actually we had actually been offered $2,000 for that outfit later, but Blade refused to sell it because I don't even see this. I think that he likes to have his lady friends dress up in that outfit for sessions of intimacy, shall we say.
Now, speaking of the accessories,
on the ramp that one time, he sold his old girlfriend's outfit.
Do what now?
I said, no wonder Kane gave Linda a tombstone on the stage one time. She sold his outfit, his old girlfriend's outfit. So.
There you go. Can't blame the man.
And now, well, what are the accessories that came with it? Did they send you guys any ground hamburger or anything?
No, they didn't. They didn't send us that. They sent us pom poms and remember what all like pom poms and panties and a bra and all kinds of other stuff.
Oh, God.
Huh.
Hey,
I don't
have to say to that.
We didn't know. Yeah, we know what the hardest part is actually explaining to my wife.
Oh,
because
no
at
doubt.
Some point you have to tell her, you know, by the honey, I just in case you notice in our checkbook, it's $200 lighter. I bought the Katie Vick outfit. You know, that was a
right.
fun conversation.
Well,
you
have
to be
tell her. It's better to tell her about the checkbook because what if she would have found the panties instead of seeing the checkbook first?
Correct. Yeah, actually, I'm very thankful to state that she has never actually seen the outfit. So, because when it came, I said, "Look what we got," and she's like, "No," and then she just went upstairs and good for her.
Just totally
right.
no sold it.
Yeah, and for good reason, I think. We need one sane person in the Reynolds household.
That's one thing. If you know you've got underwear showing up at your house and it's not yours, that's something you got to be upfront with the wife about. You know?
Those are words to live by. Those should be on an inspirational poster.
Yeah, you just got to be upfront. I'm not wearing these. It's not something I like to do after dark. Yeah. You just got to be up front.
Now besides all the...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Craig.
Go ahead, Beth.
Okay, well, I was going to say, besides the wrestling stuff on WrestleCraft, you also do stuff like different kind of, like, if I'm not mistaken, foods or stuff like that. What are your favorite non-wrestling things that you talk about on the site?
Oh, boy, yeah. On the Art and Blade show, we kind of talk about anything. And that dates back to the to the old days of WrestleCraft Radio where we had RD's trip to the grocery where I would just talk about, like, anything stupid that I found at the food mart that week. That's what, like, one of my favorite things. When you go down the aisle, food mart, I mean, if you're looking around, because there's always new items and there's always cereal they've changed and sodas that they've made different. There's always something ridiculous to find that you can talk about. And, you know, I mean, it's all stuff that's right there that people can see. And that's been the thing that I have found to be the most interesting stuff to talk about is something that somebody, you know, I'll say, you know, this new, you know, shrimp and taco potato, you know, Doritos. Oh my gosh! You know, I saw that when I was at Kroger the other day. So it's something to kind of help people connect, and I just love talking about food items anyway. So,
mm-hmm. I actually, speaking of like that, I actually saw a brand of potato chips. Well, not a brand; it was Ruffles potato chips, but a flavor that I had never seen before till the other day, and it just blew my mind. I thought they had to be specifically made for poor people who couldn't afford meat, and they were. It was flame grilled. Meat flavored Ruffles.
Meat flavored. Didn't
yes.
even define what kind of meat it was.
I'm trying to think exactly what it said on the thing. It was flame grilled steak flavored Ruffles.
Oh, okay. So steak. At least they did that. See, now steak flavored. That at least would be something I could see people being some people may appeal to them. Whenever I see the hot dog flavored potato chips, which they actually do make, that I don't understand. I like to think they just, look, maybe it's just me. I'm going to shift my age here. When you guys were kids, did you all eat hot dogs?
Mm-hmm. I do. I still do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. When you guys were kids, how did your parents fix your hot dogs?
Oh, here we go.
Well, mine basically just put a shitload of ketchup and a shitload of mustard.
No. How did they cook the hot dogs?
Actually, Mike cooked them on a pan on the stove.
Okay, so they grilled them. Okay, Craig?
Yes. They boiled them, of course.
And Contrere?
Same way. Boiled them on the stove.
Boiled them, right? And then you had that nasty hot dog water.
Yes.
That's how I like to think that they flavor these potato chips. They just take them and dip them in hot dog water. And to me, that is not appealing in any way, shape, or form. And I'm a man that I like a good hot dog.
Yeah.
We'll be made into a drop. But you know what I'm saying? A hot dog flavored potato chip, that's not appealing. No.
Let's take that flavoring and that clear ooze on top of the pan, and let's make a dry rub out of that and put it on a potato.
Exactly. There you go. I think it's so funny because, like, you guys must be a little bit older because I can't imagine anyone on planet Earth still cooks hot dogs by dropping them in the water and boiling them.
Well.
Do you guys still do that?
Absolutely.
I can't remember the last time I had a hot dog, so I can't say.
I had one Wednesday.
Dude. I'm going to give you some free advice. It's worth it. It's well worth it. Ditch the boiling water, okay? Go out and get you a hot dog roller, like they have at the gas station. Okay.
I have like one of those George Foreman grills, but sometimes
no.
Oh, I'm doing it wrong.
I have a George Foreman grill too. No, I'm throwing up King's X on the George Foreman grill talk.
Okay.
The George Foreman grill is fine, but whenever you want a good hot dog, there are two ways to do it. One, you either go out and put it on a charcoal grill, cook it that way, or you get a hot dog roller. Just like, I mean, they're not that expensive. I don't know. I know. I picked mine up on a Black Friday at one of my other favorite things to talk about, trips on Black Friday. I know I picked up my hot dog roller on Black Friday for like $20.
Oh, there you go.
Wow.
You gotta get a hot dog roller.
Well, if I have time, of course, I'll throw it on the grill, but if you know, in a pinch, you throw it in the microwave or you throw it in the water, you know.
You just go to Sonic.
Trust me. I understand the time issues and everything. I do.
Yeah.
And the hot dog roller, you put on there, you turn on the heat, and it starts slowly rotating it, right? And you put however many on. It's just like a miniature version of the one they have at the gas station.
Sure.
It takes about 3 hours and 45 minutes for it to get done in one hot dog. But that will be the best hot dog. It's just lathering itself repeatedly in the hot dog, you know, juices. Well worth it. It's worth the $20 to buy the thing. And it's worth the 3 hours and 45 minutes you're going to wait. And the wafting smell that will be encasing, entombing your house.
I just like to stick a fork in a hot dog and just put it over the fire on the stove and wait till it's pretty much all black and then throw it on the bun.
You can do a poor man's roast like that. Sure. When you guys have Brian on to talk the new Death of WCW, make sure you ask him how he cooks his hot dogs. It's sure to make for a fascinating discussion.
That man hasn't had a hot dog in years. No.
I don't think he could boil water. I think Whitney would have to do it for him.
No. I doubt that the ballpark ranks are on the team biggity bet. So
I would bet my salary to date this year that he has not had a hot dog in a year.
I would say that's probably a fair fair. I would.
Yeah.
Now we've had Archie. You've been on for us for a little bit longer than you had originally said you would be. So I will go ahead and get everyone's last question, and then we'll wrap up. So Contreras, do you have any last questions for Archie?
Thoughts and memories on the late Art Donovan.
Oh, I mean, just. You know, it's a Russell Kraft. I don't get on a scale. This is not a joke. I get on my scale every Friday morning to see how good or often how horrible I have been. And before, as the little meter is going zero, 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 and I don't know why it takes, like, you know, 15 seconds to figure out how much I weigh. But as it's doing that, I always say, how much does this fella weigh? So anytime I get on a scale, I do that. Great. I mean, classic.
He gets a lot of hate, but
I want to say something about the book.
That's impossible that he gets hate. It's like whenever Ken Bedera, you know, the thing where he... you know, he threw a boulder through a McDonald's window because he was hungry. Mm-hmm. I mean, how can that man get hate? I don't understand that. Dude was hungry. You get a boulder. Duh.
Craig, go ahead. Go ahead and ask your last question, Craig.
Your WrestleCraft book had an introduction written by John Tenta. You have any kind of relationship with him, or are you been friends with him? How'd that outcome to pass?
That came to pass because in the early days of the site, we would try and get interviews with people. And mm-hmm. as I had mentioned earlier, we had, you know, people just like, why, you know, I'm calling you and saying, you know, I'm the worst of wrestling. I want to talk to you. And people would just not talk to us. To this day, I've tried for 13 years to talk to Fred Ottman. Not a return phone call. Nothing. Okay? John Tenta returned my call. And
okay.
he was the nicest. I mean, he was so nice. And he said, look, if... other people are going to laugh at me, and so I should learn to laugh at myself. And he had the greatest sense of humor, and he was just the nicest person. I just unbelievably nice. And there were times where he and I would just talk. And you know, in the beginning we would talk wrestling, but by the end, I mean, we did not talk wrestling. No. We would just talk about, okay, what's going on with our... what was going on with our family, what was going on with our friends. And I mean, near the end of his life, I mean, that's all we did. He was my friend. And that's just something I will never, you know, ever, ever forget. So
it's very cool.
Cool. For my last question, RD, is basically, you know, you and Brian are writing the book, and Brian's in Seattle, and I'm not exactly sure where you are, but you're not anywhere close to Seattle.
I'm in Indianapolis.
My question is like, when both of you guys are working on the book, who does what? I mean, I have it in my mind that you're basically doing everything and Brian's just spell checking you. But what exactly is Brian doing?
I'm telling you what, man. I'm going to say this, and you're probably going to hang up on me when I say this. But it must be said. If you're like marriage counseling or something, you and Brian, because it's like you guys. I have heard old married couples who bicker less than you.
That's true.
You guys are always taking little shots at each other and snipping at each other, and all this stuff.
Why,
man? Just can't you both appreciate each other?
I think it's
I kind of feel like now I'm kind of feel like I should be your marriage counselor.
Well, I'll tell you what, RD, you can sit me and Brian down in the same room next year in Las Vegas, and you can also get to hang out and party with Granny if you show up for the convention.
If anybody would ever invite me, maybe I would.
Okay, RD, you are officially invited to the Vegas.
You, Ed. I got you, Ed.
Oh, speaking of Granny, do you have any Granny occasionally listens to our show, and since you're on it, she might be listening. Do you have anything you'd like to say to Granny?
She's just awesome. You're awesome. Yeah. That would be what I would say. She is by far the best. I mean, she is such a tremendous. She is so entertaining, just being herself. I mean, that's like one thing. It's like, man, one day I wish I could be a tenth as entertaining, being myself, just being R.D. Reynolds, is what Granny is being Granny. She is just fantastic.
Yeah, she's awesome. I love how she's just not, you know, she speaks her mind, you know. She's not afraid to offend anyone. And she's great, and like I say, you should come to Vegas and drink some booze with Granny, because she always has a few drinks at the party.
Well, that now that I have actually been formally invited, I will definitely see what I can do for 2014.
Awesome. Cool.
Now, make sure you go to. I was going to just give a plug real quick. Make sure you go to www.wrestlecrap.com. And check out RD and his site. It's good, entertaining reading. And, of course, the book comes out.
You actually never answered my question, RD. What exactly, like, what does Brian do, and what do you do for the book?
When we originally did the first version of the book, went in and we did, trying to think how that worked. We would just say, okay, you take this year. Once we figured out we were going to do it chronologically, it was something where we would go in and say, okay, I'm going to take, you know, this, you know, these years, I'm going to take, you know, I'm going to take up to 97. And then I'm going to take the end of the, you know, I'm going to take, you know, the spitting on the grave chapter. I'm going to do that. And then the other one would say, okay, I'm going to take the other. You know, I'll take whichever chapter you're going to take. You know, we would just do it that way. To be fair, and I have told Brian this, I've told a lot of people this, the original version of Death of WCW, Brian probably wrote a good 75% of that book, the original draft. At that point, it was almost too verbose. It was a little hard to read. And, like, I could be the only one that feels this way. And sometimes you can just have a little too much information. And it just makes it really hard to read. It makes it almost a chore to read. And that's what Brian had done. He had crammed that thing so full of information that I basically... He had written 75% of the book. I had written 25% of the book. Then I went through and took the entire book and almost rewrote it so that it was a more readable version of the book. So I would guess, you know, originally, it was probably about a 50-50% effort. Although Brian, I mean, do not for a second think that Brian does not, like, work his tail off, you know, doing these books, because he does, and he's a machine. I mean, it's amazing. You know, he'll say, okay, I'm going to write this chapter, you know, and I'll get it to you, and I'll be like, okay, you know, it's going to be a 15,000 word chapter or whatever. I'm going to see this in, you know, maybe a week, and I'll get it, like, you know, 48 hours later. And dude is a machine, and he knows his stuff. And that's why when the idea was originally given to me from EW Press after the success of the Rutherford book, which I'm still very humbled by. They came to me and said, would you want another book? And I was like, yeah, I guess writing about WCW would be good. And I thought, man, there's no way I can write this book by myself. And so I sought Brian out because I knew that his writing style and my writing style were very similar. So, I mean, it's worked out great. He's awesome. Awesome. I cannot say enough good things about him, even though I know you want to say nothing but bad things about him. So,
Well, RD, do you have, before we let you go, do you have anything else you would like to plug other than the website? I mean, you can feel free to plug anything you'd like right now.
There's a show, and it's called, what is it, Over the Top Radio or something?
Well, at least you know the name, because Brian always adds words to it on the update sometimes.
You know why I know the name Over the Top Radio?
Because you like the broadcast better?
No, because for years we AngryMarks.com was a sponsor to WrestleCrop Radio, and we would literally read that every week, and I would go, home of 10 podcasts a week, like ring the bell, and Over the Top Radio, at which point Blade would do his personation from the kid movie Over the Top, and he'd go, Over the Top, Dad! So that's how I know the name. And the show is, of course, so fantastic. How would anyone not know the name? What kind of fool would not know the name of this show?
Brian, the last time he updated, he put Over the Top Radio.
I think he's just trolling you, man.
Yeah, I'm sure he was.
That'd be my guess.
But, RD, like I said, we really appreciate you coming on, spending so much time. I know you're busy writing the book and everything. And, we want to wish you a good night. And if there's any last things you'd like to say before you go, please feel free.
I just thank everybody for sticking with the site over the last 13 years. I really, really appreciate it. And just WrestleCrop.com. We get some really cool things actually in the next week. So make sure you head over there, and especially if you like the old version of the site, you're going to be very, very excited about what we're going to be uncorking here in the next 7 days.
Awesome.
Very cool.
Awesome. Well, thank you, RD.
Thank you, guys. Have a good evening.
Take it easy, RD.
There he goes, everybody.
That went pretty good. Right before I put him on the air, I was like, Craig said you could do 30 minutes, and he's like, yeah, I can do 30 minutes. I could do a little more, and I was like, well, I have to warn you, 30 minutes usually turn into an hour, and it almost turned into an hour. So thanks, RD, for spending some extra time. I really get a kick out of his website. The very first time when I was very young to getting on the internet, it was one of the first wrestling sites that I found, and It was so awesome. It just made me everything that I read on there just made me laugh. It was just like brought back so many memories of such obscure stuff. You know what I mean? It was just great. I mean, it's a good site, so I recommend anyone who's never been to WrestleCrap.com to definitely check it out. There's there's so much stuff more now. So I mean, it's an awesome site.
And give the highest recommendation I can to the death of WCW. It has a permanent place on the back of my toilet. So
that's a good thought. Good. Oddly enough, I have an autographed copy.
By who, Brian or RD?
Yes, of course.
Well, that just like loses value. That like loses value to have just Brian's thing on there.
He handed it to me and said, here, I got you something. I was like, oh, wow, that's decent.
That was your payment for all the pay-per-views you bought over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. And continue to buy.
And especially, it didn't cost him anything, so it worked out both ways.
Schematics. Come on now.
I'll give Brian a little credit. I mean, the original Death of WCW is an awesome book. I mean, I read it from beginning to end, and there's a lot of books that I can't finish. And that.
Right.
Now
I go back and read it like once a year or so.
Really?
Yeah. Just kind of like the Dynamite Kid book. I read that like once a year. Just
wow. Mm-hmm. I don't need that depression in my life.
Well, it's actually an awesome book, and it's actually as much of an asshole as he is. It's actually a funny ass book.
Yeah, it's true. It's one of the better autobiographies.
Yeah, I love the story about the monkey that caused them to get arrested. He told Davy Boy some. Oh gosh, and I got to go back and read it now, but. There's some rib, and he told Davy, basically to go along with the rib. He ended up knowing that he was probably going to get arrested, and that's what happened.
I think it was in Japan. They said, "You want to play like monkey? You go to monkey house or something like that."
Yeah, the monkey house. Yeah.
They took Davy Boy to jail or something.
Jeez.
Well, he like grabbed a like little kid and scared the shit out of like a little kid or something, and yeah, they took him to jail. That's funny, but of all the bad things that he talks about in the book, the worst thing he ever did is the fact that him and Davy Boy used to not only shoot Matilda full of steroids, but one time I think Mr. Fuji used to take like a B12 shot, and he couldn't give it to himself. He'd always ask people to do it to him, so they took his syringe. And when he wasn't looking, switched it with some fucking decaball or something and shot him full of a steroid.
Oh, Diana ball. Yeah.
Diana ball, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
That was good. But, we got 30 minutes to kill here, and, I'm pretty sure Craig's probably seen one or two matches, but Katura, have you seen anything of the G1 climate?
Well, I typed in G1 into my YouTube, and I watched, like, the Rick Rude when he got beat by Masachono in 92, but other than that, no.
Okay. Well,
matches. I ain't watching 90 fucking matches.
Yeah. Well, I know you're not gonna watch 90 matches, but if you ever do feel like watching some, just type in New Japan G1 Climax 23 Day 4, and that I just finished watching that one today. That one was incredible. I am so loving this fucking G1. It is so amazing. It's just this awesome match after another one, and there's different style matches, and the one guy Ishii. That Brian's been kind of raving about, that guy is fucking phenomenal. He's like a shorter, fatter version of Rick Steiner without the muscles. But yeah, that's what he kind of reminds me of, is like the young Rick Steiner. And it's awesome. It's perfect. Have you seen anything?
I have not got a chance to. I was hoping to get some in today, but I just didn't have time to get to it today, to be honest.
All right. Well, I highly recommend Day 4. Like I said, I just finished that one, and it's awesome. It's kind of sad, though, like seeing Tenzan. I remember the first time I think I saw Tenzan was on that WCW pay-per-view, WCW versus Japan. And Starcade. I was so upset when he lost to the Macho Man. But it's kind of sad watching him in the G1, because you can just see he's like a shell. And now he's even out of it, so he's going to like forfeit like his last three matches. So that's kind of sad. But other than that, I mean, like Yuji Nagata, I'm sure you guys remember Yuji Nagata from WCW also. He's older now, but this guy has like the world's greatest facials. I mean... He's so fucking awesome. Suzuki's awesome. It's incredible. I mean, I can't believe there's such awesome matches going on in such a short period of time all together. And I'm sure all these guys would probably need like half a year off after, because they are just beating the living shit out of each other. Another guy that's doing like Lance Hoyt, you know, he's I think he's only like 205 or something, but he's actually putting in some awesome performances. He's actually, he looks like a monster because he's so much bigger than everybody, and he's gained a little weight, and he's really like improved. I've been impressed with him also, and Davey Boy Jr. has been doing pretty good, and Chelsea's been okay, but yeah, it's been awesome.
Yeah, hopefully I get a chance this weekend to catch up on some of that. Just been silly busy the last few weeks. So.
Well, we have 24 minutes. So what else do you guys want to talk about here?
I'll tell you what. I'm going to steal it. We could probably make a full podcast out of one of these, but on the Steve Austin show this last week, him and Razor Ramon were talking, and basically Austin threw out a very simple move that a lot of wrestlers use, and which guy they thought had the best one. So Stone Cold would basically throw out who had the best dropkick in the business. Go. So I guess let's start off with the dropkick. Who had or has the best dropkick in the business? Cotrer.
Bob Holly.
Nice. Okay. Ed?
That's a tough. I'm probably going to have to say, at the top of my head, Jim Brunzell.
Yeah, he's nice too.
I was going to say Ricky Morton, but there's one thing that Ricky does that bugs the heck out of me. When he threw the dropkick, he would land on his back.
Yeah, I never liked that.
Yeah, and that's fine, but if you miss the dropkick or your dropkick gets battered away and you land on your back, then what's the difference?
Yeah, because like Robert Gibson, when they do the double dropkick, he'd land like on his stomach, I guess.
Right.
So he could break himself when he hit the mat.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of dropkicks, like I wouldn't put these three guys as having the best dropkick, but the Von Erich triple dropkick was one of the most awesome things ever.
I think I saw that I think it was actually on like the beginning video of every World Class show, wasn't it? The triple dropkick, Buddy
Roberts.
I'm
sure it was on the highlights. I mean, it just looked great because even Kerry, for as big as he was, could get some height on his drop kicks. And, I really love that. That was awesome.
Anyway, Ricky Morton threw a great drop kick. Jumping Jim Brunzell would be, that's the one
and
I remember
Brian
the most.
Coming off the top rope with the drop kick, I think, is awesome.
And Randy Orton throws a heck of a drop kick.
Yeah. He gets really high.
He's an awesome standing dropkick.
Yes. How about clothesline, Cotrer?
Clothesline, Rick Steiner.
Good call. Ed?
Yeah, I like Rick because Rick's was different, you know.
He just leaps, you know. He just leaps towards you.
I think the guy that I liked so just the style of his clothesline was Benoit.
Like his style.
Yeah, just the intensity he would throw it with, and he would throw it and like turn himself around as he was throwing it it just looks so stiff.
Kind of like a punch clothesline. You know, he hit him with the fist, but also clothesline him.
Yeah.
Way
yeah.
I've been watching some awesome clotheslines on the G1.
Oh, I'm sure.
I always liked Nikita. Nikita had a good Russian super.
Oh.
I like that.
Ugh. Ridiculous.
Back when he was on the
juice. His is awesome because the way he sold it after he had made contact, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How about best worked punch?
Jerry Lawler.
That'd be my guess, too. Jerry Lawler.
Or Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, Jarrett. I used to like Dustin's Like, Dustin needs to have a good fun. Oh, you know who had an awesome left hand? Michael Hayes.
Yeah, the short left hand.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Okay. Bobby Eaton, too.
Okay.
Bobby Eaton.
Oh, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Bobby
definitely
Eaton.
Bobby Eaton.
Ridiculous. Bobby Eaton was ridiculous. How about
worst ever he threw a punch was Rob Van Dam. It was just terrible.
You know who throws really bad punches and should stop? Bubba Ray Dudley. He's
that's
never really been able to throw a punch. I mean, it's gotten better over the last, like, probably 5 years. But at the beginning, oh, my gosh, his punches were horrible.
Sid Vicious's punch was horrible.
So was his boot off the top rope.
And Billy Gunn, too. Like, Sid and Billy Gunn, it's like they would throw punches, but they would make contact with the forearm and not their fist. Like, they hit the top of the head with
their
forearm.
Punch, just go with, like, a forearm uppercut or something. You know, just hit forearms. They look better.
Yeah.
They're legal.
How about best tag team finisher?
Oof. Maybe the Road Warriors, maybe.
The
Doomsday Device.
The, Doomsday Device, yeah.
Either that or, of course, you got Steiners with the Sky High Bulldog where he's on the guy's shoulders.
Yeah, that'll end your career.
A bunch of
Well, they didn't use this one a lot, but because they didn't win a whole lot, but Power and Glory.
Oh yeah, that was an awesome finish. And they used the superplex, and then he did the swan dive on the Romo did the swan dive on the. They were a good tag team. I liked them.
Yeah, I was very partial to the Heart Attack from the Heart Foundation.
Yeah. Also, the Vegematic by the Midnight Express, where Stan would hold him in a bear hug and then like lower him down to where his head's just like above the mat, and Bobby had hit the leg drop off the top and it was like he killed him.
Let me think. Best singles finisher.
Best singles finisher?
Yeah.
That's
a lot of them.
I always thought the Diamond Death Drop or the Razor's Edge was a pretty awesome move.
That's fair.
If you think the Razor's Edge is cool, you should see the move that Lance Hoyt does in Japan, because basically he gets the guys in position for like let me see how I actually explain this. You grab them by the underpits and you have them and you drop them on the back of their head. Well, he picks them up face first, so it looks like he's gonna drop them like face first, but then he turns it into like a sit down power bomb, and it looks fantastic. But it's like he holds them the reverse way that a Skull Hall did, so they're facing looking down instead of looking up.
I'd say one of the best ones was probably Shawn Michaels' super kick, because it's just so simple and you can do it on anybody, and it looked like you're gonna knock it out. So that might be my top one right there.
The two discussing it on the podcast I was listening to today would never say it, but the Stone Cold Stunner was with a good finishing move, you got to be able to hit it on pretty much anybody.
Yeah.
Character,
you know, just the way he would come out of nowhere with it.
Exactly.
Drop somebody in an instant. I always like this. It's kind of like a diamond cutter, but I always like the diamond cutter better, or RKO. Those types of moves.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying. Just the simple fact that you could hit it on anybody from, you know, Vader to, you know, Shawn Michaels. It didn't matter how big the guy was. If you're hitting him with that move, you know, it was, you know, lights out.
Well, you guys are totally overlooking the greatest finisher of all time, and that, of course, is the Von Erich Iron Claw.
Oh, here we go.
Why would I not just take the person's hand and remove it from my head?
Because they had Von Erich tendon strength that just crushed your head and paralyzed you, and you couldn't do it.
Now, maybe you can talk about Elegante's Claw. Maybe we have something to talk about.
I'm sure I've told
Mike
you the story.
Mike Von Erich's flaw is better than Elvis Conte's flaw. Come on now.
I'm sure I've told you the story Ed Moretti was telling me about being in the ring with a grappler one time, and he went to put the claw on him, and Ed moved out of the way. The grappler hit the top rope and actually put the claw on his own head.
I like when they try to hit somebody with a chair and it bounces back.
Exactly.
In the throat.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. How about Power Driver?
Orndorff always did a good one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Definitely. Shawn Michaels' Power Driver is pretty ridiculous.
It's okay. I got to go old school and go back to Bruiser Bob Sweet Tan, Mr. Power Driver. He used to have an awesome Power Driver.
I don't even know who that is, to be honest with you.
It's because you don't know your wrestling history, Craig.
Yes.
He was the world's ugliest top babyface, and he went to jail for doing some shit almost as bad as Buck Zumhoff. But he was the world's ugliest top babyface. That is a fact. That's the one thing about the San Antonio promotion back in the day. They did not have pretty babyfaces. I guess Scott Casey would be the exception, but other than that,
he had like Manny Fernandez or somebody like that.
Manny Fernandez, Carlos Colon. they had Gino, but he wasn't a boy. He was only a babyface for like a couple of weeks. But other than that, you know, yeah, that was they were some ugly bastards in Southwest. The Sheep Herders. Bobby Jaggers.
Sheep Herders may be the ugliest tag team of all time.
They're up there. They're awesome, and they were in Southwest. Like, I'm sure you've never said, Creighton, have you ever seen the real Sheep Herders and not the Bushwhackers?
The only thing I ever saw on the Sheep Herders was in the aftermags when they would, you know, he would show the flaming barbed wire cage matches, and all I saw of them was in pictures, to be honest with you.
Okay, yeah, well, they had a run in San Antonio that was like, they ran the city red with blood. I mean, it was crazy. And they, like, it was almost funny because it was like the baby faces almost never got the won in the end. It's like they always lost. It's like for 2 or 3 years, the Sheep Herders, like, I almost want to say were like the Road Warriors. They almost never lost.
The Bushwhackers and Baron Von Rush may be the three ugliest wrestlers in the history of the business.
You know, and Rapture looked like that, and he was like in his mid-20s.
I know. I saw a picture like a yearbook photo of him, and God.
You imagine that being a yearbook photo? My goodness. That's horrible.
That Sunset Flip was Johnny B. Bad, Mark Mero.
He had a good one. He had
like the most graceful one I've ever seen off the top rope.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it's the best, but Kerry actually had a good sunset flip. Ricky Steamboat had a good sunset flip.
Steamboat had the best body press that I ever saw. And the best arm drag. I know that's not kind of moving.
Yeah, definitely the best arm drag. Yeah, that's not even close.
Yeah. Okay, with that said, this has been a debate for a long time. Not really, but best elbow drop from the top.
Savage.
Okay.
Yeah, Sean had an awesome one, but Savage's was better.
I disagree. I just like the way Sean threw that thing.
That's because you don't like people like hurting or stiffing other people, and that's the one thing Sean didn't do that Macho Man did.
Macho looks like
he's
a
fake.
It's
Man, I did that on Charles Robinson 1 year in WCW and collapsed his lung.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, Craig probably hasn't seen it, but what did you think of Gino Hernandez's elbow of the chair?
That was ugly as hell.
And what was funny is he wasn't here. Look at the guy; he'd be facing the crowd and jump backwards with the elbow. It was like
it just looked sloppy as hell.
Yeah,
as sloppy as punks.
That's
as sloppy
crazy.
As punks. Punk when punk throws that elbow off the top,
oh,
it's cringe.
Yeah.
It looks so out of control.
Looks like he just stuck his armpit on their face or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gino's is even more clunky than CM Punk's because it's like it was almost like a blind elbow because, like I said, he was facing the other way and then he would land kind of weird. So.
Oh, that's funny.
That Splash, I'd have to go with like a Jimmy Snuka, I think. Probably be the classic example.
Yeah.
Splash.
Yeah.
Although RVD's five star pro Splash is pretty awesome. As was Eddie Guerrero's.
I gotta go with Art Barr.
Art Barr is pretty ridiculous. Yeah, Art Barr is pretty ridiculous. Carlos tried to do it since Eddie did. He tried to do frog flash up his hill.
You know what else is awesome? The tadpole splash. That's awesome.
The what now?
The
tadpole
splash.
Tadpole. Hornswoggle, you know, the awesome worker that is Hornswoggle.
You remember when Dude Love, he had Sweet Shin music?
Oh,
that
was
great.
Loved that.
You remember when Dude Love went to throw the elbow off the top of the cage and he tore his shirt and his tattoo had like, split it off?
Yeah.
That was great. Any more, Craig?
I'm trying to think. I can't really think of anything. How about, like, best brawler?
Best brawler?
Yeah.
Gosh, there's so many. Brody's one of the first ones on my mind.
Not nowadays. You know, that's actually a category you actually got to go back and think about because, you know, nowadays you don't really have classic brawlers, but I got to go with Bruiser Brody.
I go with Brody or Mick Foley back in the day. Jerry Lawler also, he was a very good brawler. I think who else? Willie Ray's pretty good. Triple H is pretty good as a brawler, too. It came down to it.
Yeah, Bully Ray is way up there, actually. I'm not a big fan of his punches, but it's the style he kind of grew up with, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Tommy Rich was a good brawler back in the day when he was young.
Good bleeder, too.
A lot of the guys in Memphis were really good. Like Dundee or Eddie Gilbert or somebody's a really good brawler. They didn't do much back then in those territories but brawl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even Brian Christopher, when he was in Memphis, was an awesome brawler.
Yeah.
Or as little as he was. Terry Gordy looks fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Death. Can you throw him in there as a brawler?
Yeah.
Hacksaw Duggan back in the day, he was a, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's funny because Mid-South had all these awesome brawlers, and then they went to the WWE and stopped brawling and got fat.
Well, yeah, work is hard.
Hey, Ed, I saw something on YouTube the other day. I saw, you might have brought this up on the show a while back, and I vaguely remember it. I saw Kerry Von Erich cutting a heel promo in Florida.
Yeah, I saw that like a couple months ago. Tell me that was just not the most awkward, bad, but totally awesome promo ever.
That was just weird. It's just like, what the hell? I'm never hear about this. I came across it, and I think he wrestled a match or something, and I know this one, Dave, was down in the heel stuff. So.
Yeah, he wrestled Sweet Brown Sugar.
He wrestled Sweet Brown Sugar?
Yeah, it was Sweet Brown Sugar that he wrestled.
Who was that, Coco Ware or Skip Young?
Skip Young.
Okay. Coco Ware would be Brown Sugar in Memphis, that's what I was asking.
That's actually something I've always meant to ask freaking Dave, but I always forget. It's like, who is the original Skip Brown, Sweet Brown Sugar, and whose soul is from the other one? And
why do you
I've
not
only
use the B in Coco's name?
The what?
Why does he always say Coco Ware, not Coco Beware? You ever notice that in an Observer? It's talking about Coco Ware.
Yeah.
I've only seen this with Coco doing the Sweet Brown Sugar gimmick, but I've seen Skip Young do it. And Skip Young also had one of the best drop kicks in all of pro wrestling at the time. It's just not too many people know who he is.
So did Coco. Coco was very good, too. Coco was a good little work. I got a match on tape here. It's a world title match with Coco against Ric Flair for about 30 minutes. Pretty awesome match.
Interesting. Man, going back to your Kerry Von Erich, I can't even imagine that guy playing heel.
Contreras, send him the clip.
That blows my mind.
I'll look forward to put it up on my YouTube page. It was it must have been just like the only time it ever happened. I mean, it might have been like only.
I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. he's trying to be arrogant, and oh man, it's just awesome. It's just. I was like, when I saw it, I was like, how the hell did I not ever hear about this, know about this? I mean, wow.
Yeah, I just heard of David being a heel, like in the Aftermags, when he's in Florida or something like that. That's about all I ever heard about Von Erich being. Well, of course, Fritz was a big heel, but that didn't really count at the time. So.
Sure. You got about 4 minutes. Eddie, you should throw out the plugs, brother.
Actually, we got 3 minutes, so let me drop the plugs.
Okay.
Everyone, take out angrymarks.com. Everyone, check out angrymarks.com. You can always download the Streamworks show at angrymarks.com, along with a lot of other shows like the Angry Marks show and quite a bit of other shows. So check out everything at angrymarks.com. You can always download the Streamworks show at blogtalkradio.com/Contreras and older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio, and you can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo or Ed in San Antonio.
And you can follow me on Twitter. It's my last name, Proper, Proper Jam, so Proper Jam at Twitter. And, Contreras, the floor is yours.
Go to YouTube.com/Contreras. I got a bunch of stuff up there. This put together the playlist. I got 51 episodes of Memphis from 1987 up there, so pretty much the full year. If anybody wants to go up there and watch that stuff, I've been watching. One of my favorite heels, became one of my favorite heels, they had Hector Guerrero in as a heel at the end of the year in 1987 in Memphis. I'd never been so entertained in my life. He was so awesome. He was doing like the regular hair cream gimmick, and he said he had this hair cream, you know, it was a cream, and they put some jalapenos in there and stuff like that to get the extra effect in it. And he was telling all the gringos, he said, all you gringos and chicken skins out there, just send $5 to whatever television station you're watching right now. But I don't want a check or a money order. I just need the cash because they got to convert it to the pesos. And then he threatened to throw it on Lawler. Lawler said, I swear to God, if you put that thing on my head, I'll kill you. And then Lawler goes to the back. And then all of a sudden, Guerrero gets this look on this frightened look, and he drops the hair cream. Lawler comes out with a gun and takes his hair cream from. But it's like one of those cap guns like you had when you were a kid.
Oh,
yeah. So, but yeah, he was just, and then he was saying how the Mexicans spend Christmas. They, you know, they have the pinata and stuff like that, and so he has the pinata and he blindfolds poor Lance Russell, and Lance Russell is swinging with his stick, trying to hit this fucking pinata, and he's just moving it around to where he can't hit it, and said, we're going to get all the candy out of here and we're going to give it to all the kids at ringside and stuff. And so he starts hitting it, and he filled the whole pinata with flour. So All his flour got all over Lance Russell, and he got all pissed off and went to the back. And then Hector Guerrero had a match with Jeff Jarrett later in the show. And then Lance interfered and threw Jeff Jarrett a sack of flour that he hit Guerrero with to win the match. So it was some pretty awesome stuff.
That's good stuff.
Sounds like it. Wow.
They don't do that anymore.
Also, you can go to my Twitter handle is Contreras35. I did my
first tweet
in like 3 years the other day.
Okay.
I yelled at Dixie Carter for that Tito Ortiz shit. So.
Attaboy.
I don't know if I ever brought this up, but at one point, somebody started a drunk cast Twitter. And I think their last tweet was to kind of like plug the Kelly Blanchard interview.
Oh wow, that was a long time ago.
Yeah. So we're over our feet. So if there's any last things we want to talk about, Craig, go ahead.
Is there any way that we can play audio on this show, like clips from YouTube, little audio clips? I was thinking of a topic that would be kind of fun, is if we picked a our favorite theme music from wrestlers, from years ago, and you know how they had like ECW was really good about just, playing, Metallica or whatever. But then you had those those crazy WWE or WWF at the time music, like I can still remember
Jive Soul Bro.
Yeah, Jive Soul Bro or Here Comes the Axe, Here Comes the Smasher, I thought it'd be cool if we could throw out our favorite songs.
Are you talking about
theme songs?
Are you talking about songs and theme songs like this? Craig, what song was that?
I have no idea. I couldn't hardly make it up on my phone, to be honest with you.
Oh.
Well, Horse Girls in Cars. Robbie Dupree, who's supposed to be a Kenny Loggins knockoff.
Okay. I got that vibe from it.
We could just download that whole album. That was like one of the greatest things ever.
I remember when I was...
I guess the first one.
When I was a kid, man, like one of the very first things, like my parents were very strict Christian people, go figure, and they let me buy the wrestling album, it came in, it was a cassette. Yeah, they used to have these things called cassettes, kids, and anyway, they weren't as big as a CD, but they were thicker. Anyway. It was like the size of an album, and then it had a little cassette in it. And getting that, they had the Real American theme, by Rick Derringer and all that stuff. And I was just, such a wrestling dork when I was a kid. Anyway, I thought it'd be kind of cool if we could kind of revisit some of those old tunes, since I'm kind of a music nut and you guys are wrestling nuts. And, anyway.
I like that on the Bentley album. They had commentary in between the songs
mm-hmm.
by Vince and Jesse Ventura and Mean Gene. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Basically, you just gotta make a list and give it to Couture because Couture's the one that knows how to do that.
Send me a list and I can put stuff together.
Okay, we'll talk about that for a later podcast.
He needs more than like a week. He needs a couple. There's been a lot of shows where he's told me, I'm going to download all these clips, and then we start the show, and there's no clips.
Well,
we're not the Mounties by the Quebecers. That was an awesome one.
We're not the Mounties.
WWF, they're pretty good. I know when the music hits, somebody's who's coming out. TNA,
yeah.
The music hits, I don't know who the fuck's coming out.
I know. Isn't it sad?
Unless it was like Kurt Angle or somebody like that.
At least, you know, WCW, they had a horrible theme music. At least you knew who, like, was coming out. Like, you know, A Man Called Sting or Mr. Bang Bang. Or
he's a big as a bull and he's quick as a cat. I don't know what kind of bull they're talking about. Or the one with Ricky Steamboat. He's a family man. He loves his wife and son and does the best he can. Who was going to hear that? Jesus Christ.
Oh, man. But that's just perfect for Ricky.
That's tremendous.
I would have complained about that shit. I heard some of those Slam Jam things they did in 92 when they came out that album. All those songs suck. Don't Step to Ron. Ron Simmons' theme song, Don't Step to Ron. Two Girls School Free was decent because they had the video with the woman walking down the street. She said, here comes Two Girls School Free, and the kids are playing hooky and going to the arcade, and Scorpio and his limo stop them. And he says, we're not going to ride in the limo. We're going to, I'm taking y'all to school. We're not walking. We're going to step. And so they dance to school.
Okay. We're taking up all our... we're taking up all our topic material for when we actually do this. That's tremendous stuff.
Right. That's true. We'll plan it out. And
yeah, let's do that. That'll be fun.
Cool. Well, Katrina, you have anything you want to talk about before we go?
No, if you're in the mood for a movie this weekend, check out Olympus Has Fallen. I watched it Tuesday night. It's a pretty good movie.
No, I was thinking of taking the family to see Planes tonight. You know, it's like Cars, but in the air.
I didn't think it was Planes, and I was waiting for you to say Trains and Automobiles.
Yeah. Right, because that's a different movie altogether.
1994, or whenever that movie came out.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
If you get a chance, if anybody, I will check out the movie The Last King of Scotland. It's a pretty good movie. I watched it the other night. So.
Good to know.
Speaking of Planes, Craig, did you ever read the thing? I saw it like on Facebook a couple of times, how it explains how all the Pixar movies are connected.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you.
That was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, it is very cool.
But go ahead.
Can I be excused?
Well, just give me a second here. I was actually had something that I wanted to talk about, but it actually slipped my mind. And I'm going to see if I can think about it before I find the theme music, which does not look like it's going to happen. So I guess we'll be back next week, and we'll let everyone know what we will have, what we're doing next week. So everybody, come back then.
And don't forget to watch Total Divas at 9/8 Central Sunday.
What?
Watch Total Divas at 9/8 Central. And also watch Breaking Bad, the last few episodes that start on Sunday. So.
Starting this Sunday?
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta remember to set my DVR for that. And and definitely Total Divas. We're going to have a full report from each of us, Craig, so make sure you watch it.
Yeah.
And actually, that's pretty good because it's the one where Jimmy Uso gets all pissed off and breaking glasses and shit.
All right. I'll think about it.
All right. Well, back to the theme music.
Yeah, back to it.
Be the man! You gotta beat the man! You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's good shit! Let's go hook him up!
Oh! Here about
I want to drag you until I wear your Texas ass out.
got my wife tonight.